Start with just a piece of information, just an introductory piece of information. Thank you very much. Some people's minds, Chassidus means Chabad, Lubavitch. That's a mistake. Chassidus is the name of a movement that has dozens of different groups. Today, 50 at least, maybe more. Chabad is 1 out of 50. The Chassidus includes Ger and Belz and Nadvorn and Rachmistrivk and even Boston. And when you talk about learning Chassidus, you're talking about learning the Sforim that have been produced by any one of these groups. Chabad produced very important works of Chassidus. So did the other early Talmidim, like the Vadichever, the Vicious Lady, the contemporary of the Tanya. And Ger has produced a raft of Sforim. And Belz. So, when I say Chassidus, I mean the movement as a whole. Certainly don't mean to limit it to Chabad. And indeed, the sources that I'm going to take from tonight do not include Chabad. And the reason is that Chabad sources are very, very hard. They're very hard. To try to distill, pull down one idea here or there from Chabad sources is very, very difficult. Maybe others can do it. I find it very difficult. But there are others that present more independent ideas without building a whole system. You can't take a piece out of it. They present more independent ideas, and these ideas can be understood for their own, for themselves. The Shem Yishmuel was in the line of Sochatchov, another great Hasidic movement. His father was the Avni Nezer, who wrote very important works on Halacha, in addition to a very fundamental work on Chumash called Noz Desha. And this was his son, the Shem Yishmuel, which is that's the same name of the sefer, which goes through the whole of the Chumash and the holidays. Now, Hasidic Torah is, I would say, almost always based on either a pasuk, a verse, or a statement in the Talmud, or a halacha, words from the Siddur. It's based on something that everybody knows, or everybody should know, but then explains it in a certain level of depth that most people wouldn't even guess, and brings out the ruchnius, the spiritual dimension in this item, whatever it is. So here's an example. If you look in Parshas Yisro, in Exodus chapter 29, Hashem says to Moshe Rabbeinu, tell the Jewish people to be prepared for the revelation at Sinai. Tell them to prepare themselves for 2 days, and I will appear on Mount Sinai on the third day. Moses comes and tells the people, prepare yourselves for 3 days. One statement in the Talmud points out, not everybody agrees, but one points out, that doesn't sound the same. Hashem said, prepare yourself for 2 days, and I'll appear on the third day. Moshe Rabbeinu said to them, prepare yourselves for 3 days. It seems to mean God will appear on the fourth day. So the Gemara says, Moshe Rabbeinu hosif yom echad midato. Moses added an extra day on his own. God said, I'm coming in the third day. Moses said, no, the fourth day. Very strange idea. That's what the Talmud says. And the Shem Yishmuel wants to explain why. What difference does it make if you have an extra day? What motivated Moshe Rabbeinu to add a day? What really was going on in the revelation of Sinai? So let's start. What day of the week was the Torah given on, really?
Friday.
Gosh. We're penalized guesses. Right. It was given on Shabbos. That's the day it was really given. So if so, what day did God originally propose?
Friday.
Moses added one extra day to make a shot. Okay. Now there's a verse in Psalms. Ani amarti Elokim atem uvnei alyon kuchem. I said, God speaking, I said you are like angels and sons of the Most High. Ochen ka'odom tvusun. Sorry, Tipolu. Still you will fall like one of the princes and you're going to die. So another place, Chazal say, what does this mean? I said you're like angels, but you're really going to die. God said, when I invited you to Mount Sinai and I gave you the Torah, I made you immortal. I took away death. I made you immortal. Ah, but you went and built the golden calf. You went and built the golden calf. You sacrificed it. That's why Jews die. They die because of the golden calf. If it had not been for that, Jews would never die. Now says the Shem Yishmuel. Does this remind you of anything? Where people were designed not to die, and then they did something wrong, and then because of the thing they did wrong, they had to die? Does it remind you of any story that you know from somewhere? Adam, right? Adam and Chava, when they were put in the Garden of Eden, right? They weren't supposed to die until they ate from the Eitz HaDaat. They ate from the tree of knowledge. That's when they had to die. And what day of the week was Adam, where Adam and Chava created? Friday. Aha. So Adam and Chava were created on Friday. And they were created immortal, and they were given a test. Of course, they failed the test, so they were kicked out. And God says to the Jewish people, I'm making you immortal, and I'm going to give you this Torah on Friday. You understand what's going on here? This is a replay. This is a replay of the Garden of Eden. God was giving us a chance to do it over. And this time get it right. And fix up what went wrong before. Now there was one other very prominent character in the Garden of Eden. Who was that?
Snake.
The snake. Who made the case for transgression, for the crime. Do we have at Sinai a candidate to play the role of the snake?
Yeah.
Who?
The interval. The people came with.
Correct. The Abravav. The non-Jews who came along with us, the non-Jewish slaves who came along because the Egyptian power was broken, everybody was running. And they came along and joined us. They were the ones who thought up the golden calf and sold it to the Jewish people. So here you have it. It's a replay of the Garden of Eden. That's God's intention, that the Jewish people should play the role of Adam and Chava and have an opportunity to rebuild, to repair the tragedy of the Garden of Eden. Moses doesn't like it. Moses doesn't like it. He doesn't want it to happen on Friday. He wants it to happen on Shabbos. What difference does it make whether it's Friday or Shabbos? The difference is this. You have to understand what Shabbos is. Shabbos is unlike all the other holidays. Shabbos is unlike any other celebration. Because Shabbos has nothing to do with the date of the month. Shabbos is every seventh day, marching through time, not fixed by any other consideration. It's just seven after seven after seven after seven after seven. All the other holidays are related to the month. Who is it who fixes the month? Who is it who declares when the month begins? The court. The Jewish people fix it. We'll talk about this more in a little while. But here, we have a hand in fixing when the holidays are. Because we're the ones who fix when the months start. But not Shabbos. Shabbos is totally out of our hands. The Gemara's phrase for it is Shabbos is kviya v'kaima. It's independently established and absolute. This dating, that the Shabbos date is fixed and absolute, is a symptom of a deeper idea that Shabbos is God's creation. It's His production. He makes it. It's not up to us to create Shabbos, to make Shabbos, to form Shabbos. It's none of our responsibility. What happens on Shabbos comes from Him. It's His production, and totally His production. That's not true in any other day. Other days, we have a hand in making, creating, building, forming. Now, says the Shemi Shmuel, this is Moshe Rabbeinu's thought. What will happen if God gives the Torah on Friday, the way He proposes? So then, it will be a two-part transaction. God gives it, and we take it. But we will be playing an equal role. The Torah will be ours because of a joint cooperation. He gives and we take. Now, there's going to be a snake. There's going to be a temptation. What will happen if we fail? What will happen if we fail? We're holding the Torah only because God gave it and we took it. Now, if we fail, we're undoing our taking. If we have to create half the bridge and we fail, the bridge goes down. So what will be if God will give the Torah on Friday and later we fail? It will be quite reasonable, quite normal. For God to say, you lost it. You lost it. We built a bridge together, and your half collapsed. No, the bridge doesn't stand anymore. Because we built half, and we built half, and then we destroy half, it's gone. But what will happen if the Torah is given on Shabbos? Shabbos is God's production. It's His creation. We don't play any role in making Shabbos. So if He'll give it on Shabbos, it wouldn't require us to take it. He gives it and puts it in our grasp. We don't have to take it. He builds the whole bridge. If He builds the whole bridge, then even if we fail later, the bridge stands. And then there'll be no reason to cancel it.
Why does that have to say last of initial?
Enough if they had to say it, and what a person says at one time, he can take back at another time.
Okay.
Why that hurts or helps what I'm saying.
It, why do they have to accept it?
I'm not so following you. Kodesh Baruch Hu said it should be on Friday. And Moshe Rabbeinu said it should be on Shabbos. Kodesh Baruch Hu wanted us to freely accept it, and he wanted us to build half the bridge. Moshe Rabbeinu said, I don't want it to happen that way. Sure, we said not to finish. We were willing to build half the bridge. Moshe Rabbeinu said, I don't want us to build half the bridge. Even if they're willing to do it, I don't want it. Because if they foul up later, they'll destroy it. Whereas, if it's all built by Hashem, so even if they foul up later, they can't destroy the bridge. Because the bridge is built by Hashem alone. So that's why Moshe Rabbeinu said, don't give it on Friday. Give it on Shabbos. And of course, Baruch Hu agreed. And that's why we still have it today. Because we did foul up. We did foul up. We built the golden calf. But even so, HaKadosh Baruch Hu's commitment to us is absolute. Says it over and over again in the Torah, that you are my people, period. No matter what you do. You might be punished for failures, but I'm not giving you up. That's the source of it. The source of it is that the Torah was given on Shabbat.
I mean, obviously, Hashem knew this before what was happening. The reason that Hashem knew this is in order to teach us this point.
It's in order to teach us this point and to show that a human being can have tremendous input into how things happen. Okay, now, what happened here? Number one, Hashem Yishmuel put together details which most people know. Not most people. Most people who have a Torah background would know that the Gemara that Moshe Rabbeinu added a day. And they would know that verse, Ani Amarti Elokim Atem, that they were immortal, and they were made. And he'll ask him, if Moshe Rabbeinu added a day, so then what day did God want? Oh yeah, let's see, Shabbos, first, who's Friday? He could figure that out also. But no one puts it all together. No one puts it all together and compares it to the Garden of Eden and says, look, it fits detail by detail. And the Erev Rav is the snake. Right? And then to add it, the nature of Shabbos being absolute from God's side without our input, and to draw the conclusion, and you now have an insight as to why our relationship with the Kodesh Baruch Hu is absolute, unbreakable, because he made it without our contribution. This is a good piece of Hasidus. This is a good example of how Hasidus works. Now, to extend the idea to another realm, I'll tell you a Preet Tzaddik. The Preet Tzaddik of Tzaddik HaKohen of Lublin was born into a non-Hasidic family, and he grew up, was an outstanding Talmid Chacham, and he got married, all non-Hasidic. And when he was newly married, he was living with his father-in-law, and his wife had a little store. And this is a tragic story. I'm not going to go to elaborate. Once you know where he came, the guy's background from, I'll tell you what he said. One day, the village priest arranged to be in the store when no one else was there, and then spread a story that something happened there with Senator Cohen's wife that shouldn't have happened. I mean, we would say he was lying. But Senator Cohen was a Cohen, and Kohanim had special rules, and he felt that he could not go on married to her. So he wanted to give her a divorce. She refused to accept it. You're not allowed to give a divorce to a woman against her will. The rabbis made such a rule hundreds of years ago that you can't give a divorce against her will. But you can get what is called heter meir rabbanim. If you go to 100 rabbanim and they all sign in agreement, then you get permission to marry another wife. And then this wife usually gives in because she knows that she's going to be left alone. It won't make any difference that she's holding on. And then she agrees to take the gift. So Reb Tzaddik HaKohen went on a trip to find 100 respectable rabbanim who would sign his heter meir rabbanim. And during this trip, he came in contact with great Hasidic rabbis, and that's when he became Hasidic. It's important to know that he was already an established scholar before he became Hasidic. And they tell you that Hasidus is only for the simpletons. This is one of the many proofs that it's not so. At any rate, I told you 6 minutes ago that Shabbos and the holidays are different in that Shabbos date, the date of Shabbos is absolute marching through time without any human input. The holidays are dependent upon us declaring the beginning of the month. Do you know how the month was declared? How was it decided when to start the new month? So witnesses came and they said they saw the moon and they used to quiz the witnesses to see whether it was changing. It wasn't changing. But the truth is that the court didn't have to listen to witnesses or could override the witnesses. They really had a free hand. Many of you shown said the witnesses were on the window dressing. It didn't depend upon them at all. It's a gigantic bakhlokes. But leaving that aside, the two witnesses come and they saw the moon and it's genuine. And the Bezdin could say, yeah, but we don't want to start it today. We want to start it tomorrow. I know. Thanks for coming. It's nice to hear you, you know. But we're just not doing it. Or they could say, no, witnesses came. We're doing it anyway. We want to start today. I tell people, Mazidim, the Torah gives them the power to start the new moon when they, within the two possible days that it could come, whichever one they choose. So, let's say, astronomically, Rosh Chodesh Nisan could be Tuesday or Wednesday. Pesach is the 15th of Nisan. If the court chooses Tuesday to be Rosh Chodesh Nisan, then Pesach will be 2 weeks later on Tuesday. If they choose Wednesday, Pesach will be 2 weeks later on Wednesday. Which means, which 24-hour period of history is Pesach is in the court's hands. They can say it'll be 2 weeks from now on Tuesday, or 2 weeks from now on Wednesday. Kedusha, holiness of time, the anniversary of the Exodus from Egypt, they determine which one it is. The court determines which one it is. Shabbos is utterly unlike that. And this is reflected in the Siddur. On Shabbos, you say, Baruch atah Hashem, Mekadesh HaShabbos. Blessed are you, Hashem, who sanctifies Shabbos. End of story. He sanctifies Shabbos, period. What do we say on the holidays? Baruch atah Hashem, Mekadesh Yisrael VeHazman. He sanctifies the Jewish people and the holidays. Because the holidays get sanctified through us. Not Shabbos. But the holidays is only through us. Okay. Now, this also fits with the idea that most holidays have special mitzvahs. Most holidays. I'll come to the exceptions in a little while, but let's just think. Pesach, the first day of Pesach, you have the whole Seder. And when we have the temple, we have the sacrifice in the afternoon before, we eat that at the Seder also. On Rosh Hashanah, you have the mitzvah of Shofar, blowing the Shofar. And Yom Kippur, the mitzvah of Tshuva, fasting. Sukkot, you have living in the sukkah, waiting to live in Esrog. You have many special mitzvahs to do because we have to build the holiday. We have to build it. So Hashem gave us special mitzvahs to do, to build it, to make it work, to make it happen, to create the Kedusha, the sanctity. Shabbos isn't like that. Shabbos isn't like that. What positive mitzvahs do we have to do on Shabbos? That's rabbinic. You do have to do it, but it's only rabbinic. Rabbinic.
Make kiddush.
Make kiddush. Kiddush, because of Zohar Yom HaShabbos HaKadosh. Remember the Sabbath day to sanctify it. Remember. So you recite the paragraph. You're reciting a paragraph. That's very nice. It takes about 30 seconds. Mm-hmm. All over. What you're doing is remembering. You're connecting mentally, but you're not doing anything to create it. You make kiddush on Yom Tov also, by the way. So that's the big difference between Shabbos and the holidays. Now, the Arizal said, you have two holidays that are exceptions. Two holidays in which the individual has nothing special to do. No special mitzvah. Now this is for the aficionados who've been around for a while, who have black yarmulkes and beards and things like that. What two holidays did I leave out? Shavuot. Shavuot. Shavuos, there's no special mitzvah to do. Okay, there are karbonos in the Beis Hamikdash, there are sacrifices, but I'm talking about the individual. For the individual, there's no special mitzvah to do. What other mitzvah, what other holidays do they have? Shavuot, Sukkot. No, the biblical holiday. Shmini Atzeres. Oh. Half the people there never heard of that. Shmini Atzeres, the eighth day of Sukkot, so called. But it's not really the eighth day of Sukkot because you don't live in a Sukkot, you don't use a Lubna Nesrik. It's the day after the 7 days of Sukkot. No special holidays. Not only are there no special holidays, but those 2 days are linked by a number of other links. What else do they have in common, those 2 days? That's a practice. That's a mini practice, okay. I'll come to that in a minute. What else do they have in common? No. Let's think. When is Shavuos? The 50th day after the first day of Sukkot. Of Pesach. Right? 50th day after. You know, it doesn't always come out to the same day of the month. It does today because the calendar is fixed, but it didn't have to. Because when you count from Pesach 50 days, you're starting in Nisan, then you come to Iyar. And you count all the way through Iyar, and you come to Sivan. Now, each month could be either 29 days or 30 days. That's why you have 2 days Rosh Chodesh or 1 day Rosh Chodesh, right? So, if Nisan and Iyar were both 29, then Shavuos comes out on the 5th of Sivan. If one's 29 and one's 30, it comes out on the 6th of Sivan. If they're both 30, it will come out on the 7th of Sivan. And it used to vary. When the Beis Din, when the court declared the beginning of the month, they did it as they pleased. They did it as necessity dictated. And sometimes it was the 5th, and sometimes it was the 6th, and sometimes it was the 7th. The only holiday that doesn't have a fixed date of the month. Still, it's tied to the month. Why? Because it's 50 days after the beginning of Pesach. And Pesach is tied to the beginning of Sukkot, the beginning of Nisan, tied to the beginning of that month. So the beginning of the month triggers the day all the way to the end. It means that Shavuos is not really an independent holiday. It's not really an independent holiday. It's really the end of Pesach. Pesach starts, and then you count 50 days. You know there's a mitzvah to count. Spheres are only, you count the day, all the days in between. Till you come to Shavuos, which is number 50. Pesach is really the end of... I'm not getting it straight. Pull myself together and get things straight. Shavuos is the end of Pesach. It's the end of Pesach. Now let's take Shmini Atzeres. What is Shmini Atzeres? It's the eighth day after Sukkot begins. It's fixed in exactly the same way. It's only it's 8 instead of 50. So already the way the Torah describes them, they're really parallel. Shmini Atzeres is the ending of Sukkot, so to speak, like Shavuos is the ending of Pesach. But it's more than that. There's a Midrash. And the Midrash says that Shmini Atzeres should have been 50 days after the beginning of Sukkot, just like Shavuos is 50 days after the beginning of Pesach. So already Chazal are linking the two of them together. They're linking it to another day. Should have been 50 days later. Why isn't it 50 days later? So one commentator says, you know what happens on the holidays? There's one big mitzvah on the holidays, namely, coming to Eretz Yisrael. Coming to Yerushalayim. Coming to the Beis HaMikdash. You have to make a trip to the Beis HaMikdash. Now, if you put the ending of Sukkot 50 days after the beginning of Sukkot, when would it come out? In the middle of the winter. Not very convenient to travel in this country in the middle of the winter. Okay, today they get buses. But if you're going by foot, or you're going by donkey, or you're going to be slogging through the mud. So to make a holiday in the middle of the winter is just not practical. So you see another link in the way the dates are fixed between Shavuos and Shmini Atzeres. Now another link. Shmini Atzeres means the eighth day Atzeres. The word Atzeres means something like holding back. The rabbis gave names to some of the holidays. They're rabbinic names, names in the Talmud. What name did the rabbis give to Shavuos? I could probably guess if you get it right. Atzeres. When you read in the Talmud, Atzeres, Atzeres means Shavuos. So what's going on? What's going on? These two holidays are the only ones where the individuals have no special mitzvah, and they're the ones which are fixed as the ending points of the one before, which means really, really there are two holidays. There's Pesach to Shavuos is one holiday, and Sukkot to Shmini Atzeres is another holiday. Really, they come in two blocks like that. And they both have the same name. One the Torah and the one the rabbis gave to link them together. So listen to what the Rizal says and as elaborated by the Shem Yishmur.
Why would you have to wait?
One second. When you create something, you'll see it's the same idea that we spoke about before, just applied in another context. When a human being creates something, if a human being creates it, then it is as fragile as he is. It has only his solidity. It has only his permanence. And a human being is not fully permanent. Every human being is going to die. Every human being is going to pass in this world. What can you do? What can you do to take your spiritual creativity and make it permanent? The only thing you can do, says the Arizal, is to ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu to seal it. If you seal it, if it's your total production, then it has no more strength than you have. But if you create it and ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu to seal it, then it has a much greater possibility of standing. So, you work to build it, and then you let go. You let go. And when you let go, you invite the Kodesh Baruch Hu to put a seal on it to make it permanent. He has two beautiful illustrations of this idea. Some of you know that when Jacob left home, his parents told him to leave, and he was running away from Esau, wanted to kill him, and was supposed to get married. What did Jacob do first? Where did he go? Went to Yeshiva. Went to Yeshiva Shem Ba'aver and spent 14 years there. Then he went to Laban and spent 20 years there. He married Rachel and Leah and Rachel. Had the children, the whole thing. Now, Chazal tell us that the 14 years that he was in the Yeshiva of Shem Ba'aver, he didn't sleep. The Torah tells us explicitly that the 20 years that he was by Laban, he didn't sleep. Gnufsi Yom, Gnufsi Laila. Watching the sheep, he didn't sleep. What happened in between? In between the 14 and the 20. That was the night that he had the dream of the ladder, with the angels going up and down, and God speaking to him. Which means that night he went to sleep. Ask the Shem Yishmur, why did he go to sleep that night? Didn't he have enough to chazer after 14 years in yeshiva? I mean, couldn't he have sat up here learning about the Kibbeh or something? Why did he go to sleep? Says the Shem Yishmuel, because this was the break between two phases of his life. There's the yeshiva phase, and now the war with Lovin phase. He worked 14 years without sleeping to acquire Torah. But that's only the effort of a human being. What's going to make it permanent? What's going to make it last? Only if he lets go. If he lets go and says to Kodesh Baruch Hu, I built it, you seal it. And that's what going to sleep does. If you go to sleep the way Yaakov goes to sleep. Yaakov Avinu. Going to sleep means I let go and I'm inviting Kodesh Baruch Hu to seal it. And indeed, he had that nevuah, that prophecy, the dream of the ladder. Similarly, there is a halacha A person who came to Yerushalayim to bring a sacrifice. I don't know that we pass them, whether the Rambam passes Allah or not, but the Gemara does bring such an idea. A person who comes to Yerushalayim to bring a sacrifice should not go home the same day. He should stay overnight in Yerushalayim and go home the next day. Why? Mitzvah's lina. Staying overnight. Because a person comes up to the temple, up to the Beis HaMikdash, and presents himself there with his carbon, has a tremendous spiritual elevation. If he turns around and goes home, he built the elevation, and it has only his input, his foundation. Turns around and goes home, it can collapse. But if he stays overnight and goes to sleep, and he invites the Kodesh Baruch Hu to make it permanent, so then it'll be much more permanent. I won't say absolutely, but much more permanent. So you have Yaakov Avinu going to sleep after 14 years in yeshiva. You have the mitzvah staying overnight in Yerushalayim. Now, this is the explanation of what the Arizal said. What's the name of the eighth day after Sukkot begins? Shmini Atzeres. You all know what Atzeres means. What do you see in the front of the bus? When you press the button, the sign lights up. What does it say? Atzor. Atzor means stop. Atzeres means a stopping. Stopping means something wants to move, and you're holding it back. You're stopping it. Said the Arizal, that's exactly what it means. It means, Pesach, you built something. You created something. You went through the Seder. You had a week of not eating chametz, and rather eating matzah. You counted the days from Pesach to the end of 49 days. You built something. What's going to happen with it now? What's going to happen with this thing that you built? If you build it and go home, it has nothing more than what you put into it, and because it's only you, it's very fragile. So no, we cap the whole period with another holiday, and on that holiday, we don't do anything. We let go. We let go, and we invite a Kodesh Baruch Hu to make it permanent. And Sukkot is the same thing. Sukkot is the same thing. The 7 days of Sukkot are filled with mitzvahs. Difficult mitzvahs. Expensive mitzvahs. Sometimes uncomfortable mitzvahs. A few years ago, I was in Detroit during Sukkot. I sleep in Sukkot. Detroit, it was cold. They thought I was nuts. But I had my brother's down sleeping bag. That's warm. And I slept out in the Sukkah. That's it. That's the mitzvah. Stamping out. But after the spiritual creativity of Sukkah, you have to invite a Kodesh Baruch Hu to make it permanent. See, Shmini Atzeres. Shmini Atzeres. There's no special mitzvah for the individual to do. And that's why it's called Atzeres. It's called Atzeres because it holds back something that otherwise would go. Something that otherwise would dissipate. No, it holds it back. Are you with me so far? Okay, questions up to here, and then I'm going to follow the point further.
That holding back, is it active or passive? I really don't understand. I got the whole concept, but not the specific.
The specific is that you invite a Kodesh Baruch Hu to put his stamp on it, his seal on it. And he makes it permanent. Not you.
Why would you have to wait 40 days after Sukkot?
Oh, I'll explain that in a minute. Okay, somebody got, yes, your hand was up?
Yeah, I was just going to say that both the number 8 and the number 50 both have like supernatural qualities. Right? Like, you don't count 50, you don't count 8. 8 is beyond. And
absolutely. 8 is 1 beyond 7, and 50 is 1 beyond 7 times 7. That is a very important element. It's a very important element. Now, let's think about counting spheres. Let me give you a little background. Now, thank you to what the Free Tzaddik says. I told you there's holiday and there's Shabbos. They're two different worlds. Shabbos, the Kodesh Baruch Hu makes by himself. Holidays we make. But it isn't quite that simple. Because not all the holidays are equal. Not all the holidays are equal. When the Torah tells us to count the days from Pesach to Shavuos, the Torah says, Usfartem lochem Yimokaras ha Shabbos. Shabbos Shabbos is supposed to be an Avimokas Shabbos Shviz Shviz Chamishim Yom. Count from the day after Shabbos. Doesn't say Pesach. Couldn't say Pesach. Pesach is never the name of the holiday in the Torah. Doesn't say Chag HaMatzos. Doesn't say Yom Tov. It says Shabbos. Here the Torah calls the first day of Pesach Shabbos. You can prove, if you work at it, you can prove that it really means the first day of Pesach. But the question is, why would you call the first day of Pesach Shabbos? Why would you call it that? You can if you want to. After all, the word Shabbos means, get it right. We just talked about this, some of you. What does the word Shabbos mean? Not peace, not rest, not sit. No, to stop. To stop. Stop doing work. Malacha. Stop doing malacha. On the holidays, you also stop doing malacha. So as a general term, Shabbos could be applied to holidays as well as the seventh day of the week. At any rate, the Torah calls Pesach over there Shabbos. Now, why would the Torah do that? We can understand what it must mean, but why give me such an expression? It says the Pesach like this. Let's look at Pesach for a moment. Let's look at Pesach historically. The Jewish people are enslaved in Egypt. God promised to take them out, and takes them out. Why? Why does he take them out? Because they deserve it? Because they're great tzaddikim? They're so holy and they're so pious? Absolutely not. Hashem says over and over again, you know why I'm taking you out? Because I promised Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. I promised them. I keep my promises. The Midrash says that the angels complained to God, you're punishing the Egyptians. And you're taking out the Jews. We, the angels, don't see any difference between them. The Egyptians worship idol worship, and the Jews worship idol worship. So why are you punishing these and saving those? We didn't do anything to deserve it. We didn't do anything to create it. We didn't do anything to cause it. It was all His intervention. Do you hear the words now? Pesach, we didn't do anything to cause it. We didn't do anything to deserve it. It was all His intervention. That sounds like I'm talking about Shabbos, huh? Shabbos comes from God's side. Okay, there was a response. After the 9 plagues, Hashem asked us to do 2 mitzvahs. He asked us to make the Paschal sacrifice and to do circumcision. After 9 plagues! But the 9 plagues we didn't do anything for. Nothing. We didn't do anything to deserve it. We saw our enemies routed. Slavery stopped. We didn't do anything. So this holiday was initiated very much from God's side. That gives it a Shabbos-like character. Shabbos-like character. And if you trace the statements in the Talmud, you'll find that the rabbis of the Talmud hinted at this idea. I'll give you one example. There's a Mishnah in Pesachim that says like this. There was a big difference between the Pesach that they celebrated in Egypt before they left, and every year thereafter. Because it says, the Paschal sacrifice in Egypt was eaten for one day. Whereas the Paschal sacrifice in later years was eaten for a week. That's what the Mishnah says. But of course, that's simply not true. The Paschal sacrifice was eaten for one evening. Period. That's what the Torah says to eat it. Paschal sacrifice was never eaten for a week. So the Gemara says, what's the Mishnah talking about? They can't be talking about the actual Paschal sacrifice. No sacrifice is eaten for a week. No, says the Gemara, that's not what it means. It means the prohibition of eating chametz lasts for a week. In Egypt, there was only one day that they couldn't eat chametz. The next day, they could eat chametz. And every subsequent year, the prohibition of chametz lasts a week. Oh, now I know what it's talking about. But why does the Mishnah say it like that? Why does the Mishnah say that the sacrifice is eaten for a week and wait for the Talmud to say, oh, we don't really mean the sacrifice. We really mean don't eat chametz. So it doesn't say don't eat chametz. So the Tzaddik explains like this. The Paschal sacrifice is a symbol for what God did. He killed the Egyptians and he passed over our house. Not eating chametz is what we do. That's our mitzvah. That's our job. How do we do our job? Where do we get the strength to do our job? Where do we get the inspiration to do our job? It doesn't come from us. The not eating chametz comes from the korban, from the paschal sacrifice. His doing gave us the strength to do what we do. Our doing is only a consequence of what he did. It only follows from what he did. It's not something we did on our own. So we did, but we only did because he did. Which traces everything back ultimately to him. At the Seder, we talk about eating three things. Pesach, matzah, and morah. This Paschal sacrifice, the matzah, and the bitter herbs. If you're commemorating the event, which one of the three should come first? Now you got to think. The bitter herbs should come first. The bitter herbs are the symbol of the slavery. Chronologically, the slavery came first, and then the Exodus came afterwards, right? I know. But you can't do anything except through the paschal sacrifices. What he did, then we can do ours, eating the matzah and morah. But only because of what he did. What he did has to come first. Pesach, matzah, and morah. That's the first. The order in the psukim is that way. Was that the rabbis made up. The verses, we can put it in that order. But again, why? Why is the Pesach so essential? Because the Pesach means what he did, and we only follow that. Now, what are we doing when we count 49 days? Things are built on certain numbers. 7 is a very important number. 7, roughly, is the number of our world. Our world, the world we operate in. 10 is a bigger number. It's a number that characterizes bigger realities of which our world is a chunk. But 7 is really the number on which our world is built. That's why there are 7 days in our week, 7 years in our sabbatical cycle. We're built on 7. Everything's built on 7. In our world, what we work with. There are 7 nidos, 7 characteristics of a person's soul with which he operates in the world. The 7 weeks of Sfirat HaOmer, when you're counting the days, the 7 weeks, each week is dedicated to one of those aspects of your character. And you are supposed to make an effort to try to improve that aspect of your character during that week. And each one of those 7 character traits is subdivided into the other 7, so that each day is dedicated to a particular combination of 2. That's what you're doing for the 49 days. So, Pesach looks like this. The first day of Pesach, you don't count. It's the second day. Because the first day of Pesach is what HaKadosh Baruch Hu does. He does it. He initiates it. He creates it. All we do is a kind of response, but he creates it. The Rambam, and the Tzaddik uses this analogy, gives the following picture. You're lost in a forest. Lost in a forest at night. It's Rosh Chodesh, so there's no moon. Just lost in the darkness. Banging at the trees, tripping over roots. Lost. Suddenly, there's a bolt of lightning. The whole thing lights up. You look around. You get your bearings. Now I know where I am. Now I know which way is out. Then the lightning dies. Now what happens to your vision? Your vision's worse, right? Because your pupils are contracted. You can't even see the faint light of the normal nighttime. But you know where you are. And you have a vision of how to get out. You're infinitely better off now than you were before. Even though you're still blinded and you can't see. The first day of Pesach is a bolt of light. You have a sudden inspiration. You're lifted into another realm. But then the darkness closes in. And you have to march out on your own. But the marching out is possible. And it's inspired. It's moved by the lightning flash. And that's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave you. So on the first day of Pesach, the first day of Pesach has a very Shabbos-like character. Then it's our job to build on the basis of that first day. That takes 49 days. When we finish the 49 days, we have taken the lightning flash and we've internalized it, we've used it to elevate ourselves, and we've created a new spiritual reality for ourselves. Now we come to where we were 15 minutes ago. What's going to happen to that new spiritual reality? We built it! Terrific! But will it last? Will it stay or will it melt away like the mist? So we have Shavuos. And Shavuos is where we let go and invite the Kodesh Baruch Hu to seal it and make it permanent. And the same thing should have been for Sukkot. That's what Chazal felt. It should have been a 50-day period, 49 days of counting, 49 days of building the person up, each of his mitos, and bringing him finally to the 50th day. But because of the way the year is structured, couldn't be that way. But it's telling us still that Shmini Atzeres plays the same role. The role of the day where you relax and ask the Kodesh Baruch Hu to make it permanent. Okay? You with me? Now, that was a pre-tzadik. Now, one last idea, which somebody mentioned before, and definitely worth thinking about. Rabbinically, as we get accustomed. No, let me start over again. Shavuos is the anniversary of receiving the Torah at Sinai. That's a fact. So Shavuos really plays two roles. It's the capstone of Pesach, and it also is the anniversary of receiving the Torah at Sinai. Shmini Atzeres, in the last few hundred years, has turned into a celebration of the Torah. It's called Simchas Torah. What are we celebrating, by the way, on Simchas Torah? You finished reading the Sefer Torah, you finished reading the five books of Moses to the end, and then you start again. And like any ending of a section of Limut, you have a celebration. It's called a Siyum. You have a celebration. Right? So, we're celebrating finishing the reading of the Torah. Of course, the question you want to ask is, why was the cycle of the Torah set up starting with Shmini Atzeres? Why should it start there? Gosh, if I were doing it, I could have picked a very natural alternative, namely, Shavuos. That's when the Torah was given. Isn't that a natural time to start reading it? And then reading it and celebrate reading it? I would have thought so. But the genius of the Jewish people picked Shmini Atzeres. So my Rebbe said like this, that Shmini Atzeres and Shavuos are two halves of a single transaction. Shavuos is called in Siddur Yom Matan Torasein, the day of the giving of our Torah. Said the Rebbe, Shmini Atzeres is the day in which we receive it. Shavuos is his giving from his side. Now back to what we said about Moshe Rabbeinu at the beginning. Moshe Rabbeinu added a day. He added a day so that we wouldn't have to receive it, so that it all come from his side. The bridge is built by God and only by God. And therefore it can't fall down. But we do have to show that we want it. We do have to show that we appreciate it. We have to receive it anyway, even if the receiving isn't necessary for the transaction, because it happens on Shabbos, but we have to respond on our side. Just for ourselves, we have to respond on our side. So that's why Shmini Atzeres. Shmini Atzeres, which is the pair of the day with Shavuos, for all the reasons that we said, that's the day in which we celebrate our receiving of the Torah, our accepting of the Torah. And that's why the celebration of Torah is on Shmini Atzeres. Now, I hope you can see why this limud of Chassidus is special. Number one, it starts with things everybody does and everybody knows, but it gives it a much deeper dimension of understanding, and the bigger dimension is ruchni, it's spiritual. It speaks to your spirit, it speaks to where you live, what you care about, what you feel. It lifts you up and enables you to grow spiritually. It's intellectually based and spiritually applied. Intellectually based and spiritually applied. That is what characterizes genuine Hasidus, Hasidic thinking and literature and creativity throughout. And this has just been a little taste of what Hasidic learning is like. Any questions? Yeah.
Why did you pick this topic? Do you feel like it was lacking that you're not
Correct.
I noticed that most Hasidic groups were tribals, but Chabad only seemed to be black hat.
I was doing Hasidic thought and Hasidic literature tonight. I wasn't talking about Hasidic customs. By the way, it's not true that most wear strammels, some wear spudiks, and some others wear only hats. It's very varied. There are two ideas here, but I'm not going to do this more. I'm talking about Hasidic, all of Hasidic life tonight. I was just doing examples of Hasidic scholarship. It is a mitzvah in general that Jews should not dress like the goyim among whom they live. Some think it's their ISIS, some think it's their rabbanim, their midrashim on the subject. It is a mitzvah to dress differently. Okay, how differently? But a different dress is definitely appropriate. And if your whole outfit is different, you're definitely fulfilling that Jewish idea. Now, the specifics of the dress depended very much on the time and place. For example, In the mid-19th century, around 1848, I think it was, the Tsars of Russia, for centuries, made great efforts to assimilate Jews, to try to break the Jewish people, make good Russians out of them. That's an oxymoron, of course, but... And Jews dressed differently from other people, so the Tsar made a decree that from that time on, Jews were to dress like everybody else. The Gera Hasidim, of whom there were hundreds of thousands, refused to accept it, the Rebbe refused to accept it, and there were riots. And the Rebbe went to jail. Finally, the Rebbe sent a message to the Tsar, okay, we give in, we accept it, we will dress like non-Jews, we just want the right to pick whichever non-Jewish style we like. So the Tsar said, I don't care what style you dress, and dress like the non-Jews. So the Ger Rebbe told his Hasidim, now in those days Russia was big and included a lot of what we today call Poland. He said to his followers in the Polish area to dress like Russian goyim, hundreds of miles away. And he told his followers in the Russian area to dress like Polish goyim, hundreds of miles away. So you could still tell who was Jewish. The Jew was the guy who was so weird in Russia to dress like a Pole. And in Poland, the Jew was a weird guy who dressed like the Russians. So if somebody tells you, oh, those are really the dress of Russian noblemen. So yeah, I know. But if you check carefully, you'll see that the Jews in Poland wore that. And vice versa. So that's how these particular styles got accepted. Those who wear hats, I don't know how they did it, but the idea always was officially different.
What did the non-Jews get the money for the studies?
I'm talking about, I guess, the ones who have enough money for that. Anyway, I told you, I'm not doing this. I'm not going on free associating about all the different aspects of Hasidic life. If you have questions on the ideas of scholarship that I presented, I'm happy to try to answer them.
You said earlier that Shemitah and Seret is 8 days after Kuntatara's feast, and there is an argument whether it should be 49 or 50 days after.
Not an argument. The Midrash says that it should have been, but was not.
And you said the reason for that is because of the way the year is structured. It was winter in Jerusalem. It would have been hard. Now, it just seems like a weird idea that they would change that around just because it was hard.
No, listen, I see a tank. It's my fault. Nobody changed anything around. Nobody changed anything around. The Torah itself says that it is the eighth day after Sukkot. Nobody changed anything. But what the Midrash is telling us is, when the Torah made it the eighth day, the Torah sacrificed something. The Torah sacrificed something. It sacrificed the 50-day gap, which, for other reasons, should have been there, but it sacrificed it. You have to know sometimes what the Torah gave up on. But the Torah gave up on it. It's not that the rabbis changed it. Chas v'shalom. Yeah.
I heard there's a machlokes on exactly what day Shavuos happened, just outside of like the 5th, the 6th, or 7th, which is because like, there was supposedly so much light during that day that they couldn't tell until the next day.
What you heard is a fancy explanation for why in Chutz La'aretz you have 2 days and what the 2 days mean. I think it's a Taz. I'm trying to explain why there are 2 days and what the 2 days mean. Okay. But it's not inherent, because inherent Israel is only 1 day. You don't have to have such an idea, do
they?
I'm not aware of any such problems, and there have been very great works of Hasidic scholarship. You'll someday learn the Minchas Chinuch, which is a standard work, as written by Abel Zakossi. And
like
everybody learns it.
But like all those teachings, having related people like that, they seem to get nervous from Hasidic. Now, first, like you go to a Yeshiva, you stand up and you say Baal Shem Tov. They'll look at you for study. What are you saying about Shem Tov?
But not as you say a pre-tzaddik, and not as you say a Svas Emes. Those two have been...
That's right.
So that's it.